Robinhood Radio presents Stage Right or Not with Michelle Willems. Michelle is a longtime journalist and herself is a published playwright of several theatrical works. She's a frequent contributor to the Huffington Post, Daily Beast, and the Atlantic websites. Another hope made of
another show. Well, I saw two shows in New York this past week, one on Broadway, one off, and together they featured only five actors, and only four of those on a stage, by the way. The Broadway production is a revival of a revival of a revival, a drama that for some reason never gets old. The smaller show is about a rather harrowing audition that manages to combine Shakespeare and racism and feel very contemporary. So let's begin with Harold Pinter's Betrayal. Now, I first saw and loved this three-character piece at the National Theater in London in 1978. It was frankly rather mind-blowing in that it was minimal yet powerful, and that it told its story in reverse order. Now that conceit may not seem so revolutionary now, but it did then. The show soon after came to New York and starred Blythe Danner, Roy Scheider, and Ralph Julia. And in 2000, another production arrived, this time with Juliette Binoche, Liev Schreiber, and John Slattery. Where was I and why didn't I see that one? In 2013, it returned to Broadway yet again, starring Rachel Weisz, and became the ticket that people would pay a lot of money for, and did. And yet, for whatever reasons, it just did not get the job done. Critics and audiences alike agreed. Well, clearly, Betrayal is a play that directors and actors want to get their hands on. And earlier this year, movie and TV star Tom Hiddleston became the latest to star in a new version. It was a big hit in London and has now landed on Broadway. The director is Jamie Lloyd, and Hiddleston's co-stars are Charlie Cox as his best friend and Zawa Ashton as his wife, who it turns out has been having an affair with that best friend for about 7 years. The play begins, well, at the end, with the former lovers Jerry and Emma reuniting briefly. "It's nice sometimes to think back, isn't it?" says Jerry. That, of course, sets up the play, which then moves back to key points over the previous years, ending, well, at the beginning of the affair. The story is simple, and yet a triangle is never simple, which is why the director here has cleverly chosen to have the three characters on the stage at all times. After all, these relationships are never really about two people. The third character, not directly in the scene, is hovering nearby or slowly moving around what is a spare and revolving set. Basically, it's just a few chairs and an occasional table. Ultimately, Betrayal works or not based on the performers, the chemistry, and this is an excellent cast. Hiddleston is the big draw, and in fact, he's the most commanding as Robert, the cuckolded publisher, who knows more as we move along, backwards, that is. Watch him attack a plate of prosciutto and melon, and you appreciate how he so deftly combines humor with his obvious pain. Now, this is Pinter, of course, so be prepared for a lot of pauses. The play runs 90 minutes, but would probably be about 75 without the long silences. But those say plenty, as we know. Are the actual words memorable? Well, many lines resonate, even seemingly mundane ones, like, "We're lovers." Yes, I thought it might be something along those lines. "I should have blackened you in your white bridal dress." Well, we'll see if the buzz on this Betrayal will match the last one. In its preview period, not so much, but the stellar notices now will certainly matter. This is a limited run at the Bernard Jacobs Theater. Meanwhile, way downtown at the Cherry Lane Theater, an interesting piece called American Moor has just opened. Now, this one is written by and stars Keith Hamilton Cobb, whose work I did not know, but he's a powerful actor and has the stage to himself for 90 minutes. Another character suddenly speaks up. He's in the audience and is playing the director who was running an audition for the role of Othello. A bit like Chorus Line, if you want to go back really far. The play does go back and forth between the auditioner in compliant, somewhat humiliated mode and his own personal, less compliant inner dialogues about racism in the casting business and beyond. He points to the director, but is he pointing at us as well? Yes, this one joins Fairview, Tony Stone, and some other recent shows which partially blamed the largely white ticket buyers for being part of the problem. Much of it is well deserved, of course. The character laments that he'd prefer to play one of Shakespeare's lovers, or fools, or kings. Alas, he's only thought of for the big O, as it is constantly called. There is seething emotion throughout this piece. A little white man is asking me if I have any questions about playing a large black man, he says. I ain't got no questions, but you should. This is a tour de force performance and food for thought, not only about how actors of color still face certain hurdles, it also offers more than you'd think about the power behind the words of the bard. But it does feel too long. One character shows often do and might be more powerful at an hour. And it occasionally borders on telling, or in this case, lecturing, not showing. Still, American Moor is a unique, worthy piece of performance art. Now, finally, there is always one Broadway opening or closing to mention. This week's news is that the Lehman Trilogy will be moving there in the spring. Now, this was a smash and a short run at the Armory in Manhattan, a dazzling production. I'm not exactly sure how they will duplicate it on a standard stage. You know, I often talk here about how many small, intimate pieces don't always transfer well. Part of me thinks Lehman is almost too big to do so. But it has done well around the world, so there's no reason to be skeptical, unless you wonder if tourists who like the light stuff will gravitate to a 3.5-hour, 3-performer play about a Jewish family who came here from nothing and went on to the top of the financial world. Well, for me, the most potentially exciting news of late is that Paul McCartney has written the music for a theatrical production of It's a Wonderful Life. Well, Elton John did a pretty good job with The Lion King, so there's no reason to think this recording superstar won't as well. I am sure, as always with these shows, it is a ways off, but wouldn't it be nice to have it up by Christmas? If for no other reason than we don't have to watch the movie on TV for the 100th time. It's one of my favorites, Jill, but a McCartney musical version sounds pretty good to me.
That, yes, it actually does. And, you know, where normally I'm skeptical, I think that Lehman will have, just a guess, just a feeling, but I think that it might have a certain cachet to it. Just absolutely. Because, again, money sells. It's one of those things. And there's no one who's somewhere in the recesses of their brain pan doesn't know Lehman Brothers.
No, that's absolutely right. And it'll be a limited run, so then it becomes
Right. We should ever forget Nicholas Nickleby, just in terms of, how will that ever work? There's something to be said for sort of reconfiguring or reframing or rethinking, not just reimagining. My new favorite.
There's a number. The Ferryman was 3 hours this year. Not only won the Tony, but did very good business, at least for 6 months. I'm not sure it was supposed to run much longer. The big one coming in a few weeks is Inheritance, which is a two-parter a la Angels in America on a tough subject, but it's been a very big award winner in London. You know, they do pick up a buzz and a cachet that, you got to be the one who saw the Lehman Trilogy. The truth is a lot of people saw the Lehman Trilogy in New York already when it played here, are there. But anyway, we'll figure it out. I'm sure it'll do well enough.
All right. And are you excited about any other? I keep seeing little things that are being talked about other than Paul McCartney that might appear, and I can't really tell if they are just tidbits to tickle the imagination or if they're actually really going to happen.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of music coming, as we know. There's Jagged Little Pill. There's Tina Turner. There's at least 3 or 4 of those kind of shows. Big ones, of course, are Inheritance and the LBJ, the new LBJ show. And then there's the Bob Dylan, talk about, music superstar, the Bob Dylan transference of Girl in the North Country from the Public. There's going to be a lot of contemporary music. There's also a version being worked on right now I'm not sure if I'm allowed to talk about it, but that we'd probably be seeing next year at the Public Theater, music by Elvis Costello, a very interesting piece based on another really great movie. But I'm going to tease that for now until I can, until I know that I'm allowed to say more. But it's one I'm excited about. I don't know, people within the business are saying it looks like a really interesting fall and winter season ahead, which doesn't always happen. Heavy stuff usually starts us off, and then it gets very musical. So anyway, we shall see. But I'm looking for Sir Paul McCartney to make... He wrote an opera, didn't he, a few years ago?
Absolutely. Oh, and an oratorio. The man has... let's just say the man has range.
He has range, and he has this such a great heart. You know, he was always known as kind of the sweet beetle, you know, and he still does. He still writes these incredible love songs. They're called love songs, and people sometimes call him a little too syrupy. But so would he be the perfect choice for It's a Wonderful Life? I'll put money behind that one.
Stage Right or Not with Michelle Willens, produced in the studios of Robin Hood Radio, robinhoodradio.com.